Well, hello, everybody. My name is David Everson, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. I'm very grateful to be here, grateful to be alive and sober, and grateful to Alcoholics Anonymous for saving my life. God separated me from alcohol on June 24, 2007. I have a sponsor. His name is Walter M. Coincidentally, he has the same sober date as me, June 24th, except he's got 15 years on me in sobriety. So he is the class of 1992. My home group is A Vision for You. We meet in Union on Thursday nights, and it's a big book step meeting, a study meeting. So we invite a speaker to come in and talk about his or her experience with a step under review this coming Thursday. It'll be step 10. And then after that person shares, people can share their experience with step 10. The following week, it'll be step 11. We go through the 12 steps over a three-month period that way. Always bringing someone in from outside. Because there's only so many people in our home group, and you know, everybody will get pretty tired of hearing the same people talk all the time. So we try and bring other people in, and it seemed to work very well. Last Thursday, we celebrated 13 years. I'm very grateful to be a member of that home group. And thank you very much, Denise, for the invitation to be with you for this month of June. It's been a wonderful experience for me. I was very nervous coming here first. But thank you for welcoming me and for what you shared with me before the meeting and after meeting, and for making me feel very much at home. And I do feel at home in AA. This is where I belong. Because you people know how I think and how I tick and where my shortfalls are. I'm a real alcoholic. Left to my own devices, I'm powerless over alcohol. I have no power, choice, or control on my own devices, and that was abundantly clear for over 35 years when I was out there actively drinking and pretty much ruining my life and almost killing myself. There was really nothing that I could do on my own that would stop this craving or this once I started drinking, or most importantly for me, a guy like me, this what we call the spiritual malady, this feeling I have that I couldn't shake, that I just wasn't good enough. I just was a loser, that I just couldn't fit in, that everybody else seemed to know what was going on, and I was sort of out of step with everybody. I didn't even feel comfortable in my own family, for crying out loud, from the get-go. And I came to realize later on that that's one of our legs of that three-pronged step stool of Alcoholics Anonymous. The obsession to drink all the time, the craving once I start drinking I can't stop, and the spiritual malady where I'm feeling that I'm just hopeless and I might as well drink because I'm never going to amount to anything. So that's my story. So I came in here pretty much lost about everything I could lose. I lost a job of 19 years with one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, mostly because of my drinking. I lost my health, relationships pretty much were all in shambles, even my own family. I was a stranger in my own house, and it was a downward spiral. And then God separated me from alcohol on June 24th, 2007. And that began my journey from a hospital bed that I don't recall much about because I was in a fog, but learning later on in conversations with my family members when I was making amends, the pieces started to fill in and make more sense. But from that hospital bed to a rehab for over 3 months, almost 104 days, up near West Point, a place called Garrison, New York, where I was in an AA meeting every day and had excellent counselors, and there began to be a little spark of hope that maybe I'm not going to die, because I was listening to what people were saying, and they were very encouraging. It told me that you're a good person and you're worthy of love and respect, because I sure didn't feel that way when I came in and I showed up on their doorstep with a tracheotomy and all skin all gray and could barely walk, and after a grand mal seizure and ulcerating my esophagus so badly from the vodka over the years that it's a wonder that I did not die on that June night. So that began my journey. And after the rehab, I was in a sober house not far from here in Mountainside, where the gentleman there was zero tolerance to drug and alcohol, but they made sure you had to go to an AA meeting every day, or NA, they didn't say which, but you need to be active in one or the other. And zero tolerance, as I said, to drugs or alcohol. If they think you're using, you're out if they test you. And I had nowhere else to go, so I'm scared to death and white-knuckling it. But those guys got me to an AA meeting every day, and that's where I met a man who was putting on a workshop about these 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in all those meetings, I got to meet people and listen to people that were speaking, and some of them are here tonight in meetings that those guys took me to, that they shared a message of hope that this thing could be beaten if I followed these steps. And they were right, so I'm very grateful to them. So that began my journey. Tonight we'll be talking about mostly in chapter 6, it's called Into Action, and we'll spend most of our time between pages 72 and page 82, but I made a couple notes that it was pointed out to me that chapter 6 is called Into Action for a reason. It was pointed out to me that notice it's not called Some Things to Reflect On, or Some Points to Consider, or maybe some things to ponder. No. It's into action. Because in these short pages, in this little chapter, we cover steps 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. So that's why a lot of what I'm going to be covering tonight is just in the span of those 10 pages, but there's a lot here to cover. And it's all about action. No more sitting on my laurels thinking I got this because I'm not drinking today. I need to take action or I'm not going to get well. So, the fourth step, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. That was daunting, as I mentioned last week, but I knew it would require for me to do it if I wanted to save my life. And my sponsor, by laying out for me instructions from this big book, our text of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wrote out my inventories, my resentment inventory, those four columns. Where the fourth column is where I tried to identify where I was at fault instead of just trying to blame everybody else. My fear inventory, where I was pretty much afraid of everything. Afraid of living, afraid of dying, afraid of heights, afraid of being successful, afraid of not being successful, afraid of what you thought of me, which is abundantly clear because I had that feeling when I first walked in, or even just was aware. And then the sex inventory. Going into all of my relationships that I've had, no matter what they were, and how did they work out, and how did they turn out, and they all pretty much had the same story, and my drinking was a major factor that came up in a lot of it. So I made my three inventories there, and from that inventory, those three inventories, I was able to develop a sane and sound ideal of what I thought a relationship would look like or should look like with another person. And if I wanted to meet somebody that had those ideals, it was pointed out to me that I better be reflecting those ideals and how I act and how I behave and how I think. So that brings us now to the fifth step. And I'll read the paragraph on page 72, which is the beginning of chapter 6, Into Action. Having made a personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have asked to turn in a rough way what the trouble is, and we have put our finger on weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we will have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our defects. That brings us to the fifth step in the program. This step, having made a searching and fearless moral inventory, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. And it was pointed out to me that it didn't say admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being what we did wrong or where we were wrong. It says the exact nature of our wrongs. It's one thing for me to do something wrong and then say, hey, I'm sorry I did that, and then say, okay, well, don't do it again. But if I look into the exact nature of my wrong, I realize that the reason I did that thing, I'm going to keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, because it's not what I'm doing, it's what I'm thinking that's causing me to do it. and causing that separation from me and you. So that helped, again, me realize that this is a vital, life-giving step for me to take if I'm going to be free of this disease of alcoholism, at least on a daily basis. I noticed that Bill, later there on page 72, he doesn't say the exact nature of our wrongs, he says the exact nature of our defects. Because as I pointed out last week when we were talking about the fourth step, and I went into detail on those four inventories and such, when I sat down with my sponsor on the fifth step, he made some notes and he came out with a 3x5, some character defects for me. And he said, this is kind of what I've observed while listening to you as you shared your entire fourth step, and this is what came to me. Then you may add to it, subtract it, or you can throw it away, but this is what came to me. Attention-seeking, lust, victim, manipulative, ego, prideful, dishonest, controlling, pushy, self-reliant, impatient. And I remember, as I said last week, wow, that is exactly me. So those are the exact natures of my wrong. When my ego starts to get involved in how I want to shape things the way, I guess maybe I can ask the question, does anybody ever think that all my problems are because things aren't going my way or people aren't doing what I want them to do? And that was my MO. I was miserable in my life because people just weren't doing what I thought they should be doing. And on it went. And I was just in bondage to that. And the fourth and the fifth step experience helped me get out of that and realize that it's not about me. That people have their problems. Life is life. Life happens. And I need to be open-minded and adjust and seek guidance from my Creator. And guidance from my teachers on how to behave and how to react. And it was so crucially important. So, I'll go on now to when I've completed my fifth step with my sponsor. On the bottom of page 75. We pocket our pride and go to it. This is my fifth step. It was illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. And I was at the end of my fifth step. We could look the world in the eye. And I mentioned that last week. I felt finally I could look people in the eye instead of always being downcast because of my shame and feeling uncomfortable and feeling less than. Our fears fall away from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. And I felt very close to God when I completed my fifth step. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we have begun to have an spiritual experience. That feeling of the drink problem has disappeared, will often come strongly. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. And I felt all that. And that I cannot tell you how strongly that fifth step experience affected me. I really felt a part of this universe and a part of God's universe. So now on to, as we go on, returning home. I had those instructions. Returning home, we found a place where we could be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask if we had admitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. How is our work so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skipped on the cement, put in the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? You notice we're talking about building an arch there and a foundation and mortars without sand. And Bill talks about that a lot. And it was explained to me, and as it's mentioned earlier, too, about this cornerstone and keystone business, that the foundation was my willingness to go to any lengths, to do what I saw people around me that had recovered in Alcoholics Anonymous and how had done and how they were living their lives was as far what I wanted to try and grow towards by far, because I had nowhere to go, as I mentioned earlier. The cornerstone is my believing. And that's a step three experience, believing that my God would help me get there. And the keystone was my decision to actually do it. There again, taking some action. So Bill talks a lot about building an arch, and that's why. So on to 6 and 7. The next page. If we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step 6. And to what to our satisfaction? Going back over those first 5 proposals. Step 1, step 2, step 3, step 4, step 5. Is there anything I missed? And for me, there was. There was something that I needed to share with my sponsor that I didn't bring up and didn't write about it in my 4th step, and it didn't come up when we met for those 3 or 4 hours on my 5th step. And a few days later, I did call him, and I shared with him. And I thought I was going to get the wrath, but I didn't. He said, I have no judgment of you about that. And he was very calm, and he says, take that to God, and you'll be fine. And I thought, wow. Because I had all guilt about this, but not at all. Again, one more validation that this program works. So, if we can answer to our satisfaction, we look at step 6. We have emphasized the willingness, there it is again, as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we admitted are objectionable? Can he now take them all, every one? For me, that was that list of character defects that my sponsor had pointed out to me. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, he would hit the nail right on the head. Which is why they talk about a self-appraisal is not effective when we talk about writing inventory, because we're master liars. And we even lie to ourselves. Because when I started on my 4th step, I realized I put down a resentment I had for somebody. I was always trying to find a little justification for my actions about here and there. Because I'm not only lying to other people, I'm lying to myself. Because ego will do that. Ego is very protective. Ego does not want recovery. My mind wants me dead. It'll settle for me drunk. It'll always try and take me back to a drink. So if we still cling to something that we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. And there wasn't anything in my case. So when we're ready, we'll say something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, the good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my uselessness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have now completed step 7. Now, there's not a lot of writing there in steps 6 and 7. Just a few sentences. But steps 6 and 7 comes up all the time. All the time in my life. Because when I'm in a situation and I am faced with a decision, or if something is in front of me, I've got part of me saying, how dare that person say that way, or be that way, or this and that and the other thing, and it's kind of pulling me towards the negative side. And I've got this other little voice saying, be calm, be still, and look at it from a different angle. So to the extent that I'm turning to God to show me and guide me is the extent that I'm successfully following steps 6 and 7 every single day. And it always comes up, no matter what the circumstance, no matter where I am. And I need to keep my mind on that all the time. I mentioned a couple weeks ago, that step 3, my 3rd step prayer, my 3rd step experience, was just sort of like saying the words and going through the motions and all, because I believe in God and all. But I didn't really have an experience with step 3. But I did later on. There were little things that, call them like winks from God, that something would happen, it would be like a coincidence or something that would go my way or some enlightened thought that I would have, and I would realize looking back that that was God's hand in all that stuff. And I started to have more and more of a 3rd step experience as I went on. The same with steps 6 and 7. As time went on, and as I already mentioned, my home group and what we do in our format, I've been to several step 6 and 7 meetings over the years in my home group. 4 a year for now, for almost 10 years. And everybody has a little different take on step 6 and 7, but it's all growth. Everybody looks at it a little differently, depending on their circumstance and their experience. But it's all enriching, and it all helps me grow. So step 7 and 6 and 7 are ongoing, I believe. Okay. Now, on to step 8.
while I go take it.
In the middle of that page in 76, it says, we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of all persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. That's my step 4. Now we go out to our fellows to repair the damage done in the past. We attempted to sweep away the debris that had accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed in the beginning that we go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Now, I knew I needed to make amends to a lot of people. I didn't really know how to go about it. So, my sponsor had me start to make a list of people that I had harmed. And so I made that list. And a lot of them came from, not all, but a lot of them came from my fourth step. Because there were some people in my fourth step that I had resentments to, but they had not harmed, so I didn't really need to make amends to them. But there were a lot of cases, though, where I did have a part in it, and I did need to make amends. So, for example, I made that list, and my sponsor had me put them on 3x5 cards. And there were about 25 names. And first I was put the person's name and relationship, you know, what have you, and the harms that I felt that I had done. And then after that, where that person might be, you know, contact, whatever, last known address, phone number, what have you, if I knew. And then below that, a space where I could put where I had tried to contact that person. And then what was the result with those times. So I had my list, but some people were very hard for me to put on that list because the step says that we made a list of those people that we made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, capital A-L-L. And they're was one person that I really was not willing to make amends to, and that was my second wife, my ex-wife, and because we had a lot of problems from the get-go, and of course I'm drinking, so I'm contributing to it, but there was an adulterous affair with the guy next door that went on, and on top of that, I had a drug problem and was getting into my drug samples. As I mentioned, I was a pharmaceutical rep, and it was real messy, and we had a messy divorce. And I mean, it was ugly. Declaring bankruptcy after the divorce and all that. So I had a lot of resentment there. So this is somebody that I didn't really feel that good, keen about making amends to. But I put the person on the list anyway. Another person was my mom. I knew I needed to make amends to my mom because after I lost that job in California in 2002, I came back to New Jersey and from California, and I spent the next 5 years under my mom's roof. My dad had been dead for 2 years, supposedly helped taking care of my mom, who was in her 90s, but we look back and we wonder who was taking care of who, because all I did was drink, and I was useless and worthless and unemployable, and it showed. And I was a tremendous burden on her, and yet she prayed for me every day and was always trying to encourage me and trying to offer her help in any way she could. Couldn't make that amends because my mom died while I was in rehab. Just a couple months after I had that seizure, and I was up at that rehab for those 3 months. So that was one. Another one with my dad, similar situation. My dad, I was a horrible son, especially during high school. We fought like cats and dogs. Although we got along a lot better in later years, still I had remorse about that, and I wish I could make amends to my dad, but as I already indicated, my dad had died in 2000, so I couldn't do that. And for my mom and dad, for not being the son that I should have been to them. Again, can't do it because they're deceased. My first ex-wife, who we got married very young, and after we split up, we had some encounters over the years. This was back in 1980, that we would talk on the phone, or we have see each other and things like that, and we'd like start to communicate, but then something would happen and I'd lose contact with her, and vice versa, and last I heard she had moved to Sweden, and you know, there was all this stuff. So I don't know how I'm going to make amends there. And then I mentioned this guy last week. There's a California Highway Patrol officer named Sean Nava who arrested me for my last DUI, and I was absolutely guilty, drunk at high noon on a Friday when I was supposed to be calling on doctors, and spent the night in Northern County, Vista County Jail in San Diego County. And a week later, when I got a lawyer for $1,500 just walking in the door, the lawyer wanted to see my summons, and I showed it to him, and he says, "Oh, they have no case. Sean Nava was killed by a drunk driver last week while he was giving a ticket to a drunk driver. They have no case. There's no arresting officer." And he was elated. I was crushed. I killed a guy who was doing his job. Or a guy like me killed his job. It could have been, killed him. It could just as easily have been me. So I mentioned that to my sponsor. With these, how do I make amends for that? And he said, "If you're willing, God always connects the dots and he'll show a way." So I took that to heart. I had my list of 3x5 cards. And before he sent me off, he gave me instructions on how to do my 9-step. He said, "You know, David, you don't have to do this." And I thought, "Huh?" I kind of looked at him and I said, "Really?" He says, "No, you get to do this." And I looked back and I thought, what a blessing that was, because how many times I have been remorseful of things I have done and way I had treated people and my behavior for decades, and now I have a chance to try and make things right, honestly try and make things right. So he was right, I get to try and do this. So off I go now with my 9-step. And my first amends was to my sister, who lives down the street from my mom and dad. And I didn't know what to expect, but I figured, well, I'll start with my sister. And we talked for a long time, and she really laid it all out about all the things that she went through watching her baby brother kill himself. Because I'm the only alcoholic in the family, the only one with any drug problem. And her conversation she would have with my older brothers about David and his problems, and they'd say, "Well, what are you going to do about it?" It was all on her. And the helpless feeling she had and the frustration she had and all of that. And we talked a lot about my relationship with my mother from her point of view, and that she feared for my mom, living under the same roof with my mom when I was drunk. She didn't know how I was going to react. I didn't know any of that. So that was a long amends. And she had asked me if I had her husband, my brother-in-law, on my list, and I said no. She said, "Well, he'd like to talk to you." And I didn't even occur. That never even occurred to me. Mm. So I asked him, and he said, "Sure, yeah, I'd like to talk." So we made an appointment, and it was about a day or two later. We met at a Perkins coffee shop not far from the house, and we had iced tea, and I remember I had a lemon meringue pie, and I forget what he had. And we talked for a long time. And he started off by saying, "David, well, you know, you lost 5 years of your life." The 5 years that I was living back in New Jersey after, you know, leaving California. And he went on and on. When I mentioned that to my girlfriend in California that night about losing 5 years of my life, she very quietly said, "Only 5. That had a big impact on me to this day. But Peter went on, my brother-in-law, and detailed what his life and was like in his household because of my drinking. All the arguments that were caused by me and my drinking. Telling his grown daughters who were married, "Don't you ever let Uncle David drive when you're in the car with him." And on and on and on. I didn't know any of that stuff. I had an inkling, but it was never spelled out like it was. So I'm very grateful that I had that opportunity to sit down with him. So on we went. I went on with my amends, and little by slowly, I slowly started to feel better because the weight was coming off. I was able to make some amends with my mom and my dad and my mom and dad through the form of writing letters. And so that's one thing, but at least it's something. But more importantly, I think, particularly with my mom, I've resolved to try and live my life and behave the way I know she would behave. And because she was absolutely always giving and loving and caring and reaching out and accepting everyone unconditionally with love. And I always try to do that, to exhibit that behavior. And it slowly, I believe, I hope, became a part of me. I was able to make amends with my former employer. On my last trip to California, I was able to sit down with several of my past coworkers and make amends to them. And believe me, everybody was very happy for me. They were glad that I was sober. They were glad that I was doing well. And it was all very encouraging, and I appreciate that. But I was dreading the conversation with my boss, the guy that had fired me. And it was tough getting a hold of him, but then one afternoon he called me up. He had my phone number, and he called. And I said, well, Bob, I explained that I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm in a process of, in this program of trying to make things right for harms that I had done. And I asked him if he would be agreeable to that. And he said, absolutely, but I don't know why. And I said, well, for one, I owe an amends for being one of your worst employees. And he would not hear of it. He said, absolutely not. You are a fine employee. I know you were going through a lot when your dad died of cancer. And I could see the toll it was taking on you. And he was just so compassionate to me. And I was in tears on the phone with Bob. But thank you, God. Once again, God showing up. And making all the difference. I mentioned about that California Highway Patrol officer. You know, how do I make amends with that? And my sponsor saying that God always connects the dots. It was about a year or two, maybe not quite 2 years. I got a letter in the mail, and it was just a. It had my name and address on it, but I think I was just on some mailing list. And it was from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Foundation. And this is an organization down in Washington, D.C., where there's actually a wall down there where names are engraved of peace officers, police officers, sheriffs, deputies, prison guards, MPs in the military, etc. Anyone involved in law enforcement that was killed in the line of duty. And would I consider making a contribution? And I got all choked up when I got that letter. And you can bet I sent him $100. I didn't scrape it together, but I did. And every time I got a letter from them, I sent him as much as I can. So my sponsor was right. You know, that God does connect the dots. Mm-hmm. There's one amends that I could not make. And it was to that second ex-wife. Now, bear in mind, I had four trips over the last almost 10 years. I had four trips to California to make amends. And to the best of my knowledge, I'm all caught up on my amends. I had one trip to Washington, D.C., because I was able to make amends with my first ex-wife, who was back living in Northern Virginia. And through reaching her, through her former brother-in-law, who lived in Colorado, he got my number to him, which is very appropriate. And then she called me. I understand you're looking for me. And we talked for about 2 hours, and it was like we just talked yesterday. And she explained about her father had recently died. He was a general in the Air Force, and he was going to be buried in Arlington National Cemetery, and would I please come to the funeral? And so I went down to Washington, D.C., and spent the week. She said, of course, you're going to stay with my husband and me. She's married this guy from Sweden, really neat guy. And so I spent the weekend with them, and it was very moving. So God does connect the dots. So four trips to California, that trip to Washington, D.C. But the one amends that I couldn't make was to my second ex-wife. And I was moved about 3 months ago to try again to search on the internet, do a Google search, and I put in her name, and where nothing had popped up before, something popped up this time. And it was with a different last name, but when it said for associated people, my name was on there, my parents' name was on there, her first ex-husband was on there, so I know this is the one. And it says that this woman died on July 11th, 2009, at the age of 51. So she died when I was just a couple years sober, and I didn't know. And there was no other information about how she died or what was the cause or anything else. So to this day, I don't know. And I feel really remorseful about that, not being able to make the amends to her. That's something that I'm taking up with in my religious community for guidance there. So, the big book of Alcohol Anonymous, this 12 steps, this program of recovery, clearly has saved my life and has made all the difference in my life, today, and my relationships with people, and most importantly, my relationship with God. And it's taught me to be of service to others and not look for what's in for me, because that was how I lived my life beforehand, because I didn't know any better. I'm selfish, self-seeking, self-serving, dishonest, and afraid when it all boils down to it. And thanks to this program, I was able to break out of that and be a different person and be a different man and hopefully be a better man. So next week we'll be talking about steps 10 and 11 and 12, but again, I want to just say that I'm grateful to be here and to be able to share with you my experience thus far with this program. That's all I got. Thank you.
Thank you.